Let's speak to the Health Minister, Edwin Poots. Good morning to you, Minister.
Morning, Stephen. Just to say that I'm travelling, so if I drop out at some, we'll try to re-engage.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you very much for coming on this morning. We appreciate it. What is your reaction to what you've heard?
I think it's just an awful story. Circumstances are absolutely tragic. Here we have a young couple. They've got married. They want a baby. They're so excited. They're so looking forward to that. They go for their 20-week scan and they're told this horrific news that there's no real chance of the baby surviving outside of the womb, and she's left in this desperately difficult situation with really hard decisions. And I can fully understand that she wasn't happy with the process that was offered to her, and the absence of being able to make a wide range of decisions is something that she has a significant issue about, and that is, you know, an issue that I want to look at, and I want to talk to my professional colleagues about, and how we can seek to identify best resolutions for people who find themselves in these circumstances. Because Sarah's not the only one, and there are other cases. This isn't a common occurrence, but it's not an isolated occurrence either.
What was your when you heard that story yesterday? Was it your gut instinct, Minister, that Sarah should have been able to choose to have an abortion in Northern Ireland?
Well, I'm aware of people who have been in similar circumstances where that has been the case. So, whenever I first became aware of this, I did ask the Chief Medical Officer. We should be getting a second opinion. Unfortunately, at that point, Sarah had already moved ahead and had went for the English option. So that's, you know, I would like to have had a second opinion on the matter, but I believe that doctors who were treating Sarah and caring for Sarah acted in best faith.
We will come to that in a moment or two, but I have seen a letter in which it was either Sarah or her mother, I believe actually it was her mother, wrote to you personally, Minister, and setting out her situation, saying they were desperate, and the response from your department as recently as Monday was that while the department sympathised with her situation, the law was clear.
Yeah, I think the letter was at that point was lodging a complaint about the law and so forth, it as opposed to us actually seeking to do something for Sarah, because I think Sarah's family had made the decision at that point that they were going for a termination and had made the decision to do that abroad, and that's what it stated in the letter.
But if Minister, you, knowing about the case, wanted to get a second opinion, why didn't your department tell that family we are urgently seeking a second opinion?
Well, the letter went out, and I don't think we should get too hung up on that issue. At a personal level, I spoke to the Chief Medical Officer about the issue.
When?
Whenever I learned of it.
A week ago?
I expressed the view that it would be possible to get a second opinion, and he was very clear that the opinion that had been expressed to him was what the legal standing was, and that the decision wouldn't be changed. So what I'm saying, Stephen, this morning is that I have a lot of sympathy for Sarah's circumstances.
Can I just clarify one thing? And look, this is not, you know, I don't not think this is an issue where, you know, you've got an interviewer, you know, hitting you with all of these aggressive questions. That's not the situation we're in, because there are many people on the other side of the debate, and they're as entitled to their view as any other. But I just want to clarify some of the details this morning. When you said that you approached the chief medical officer and it was his opinion that the decision wouldn't change, it's not for the chief medical officer to determine the legal position in this case, is it? It's surely for a court to decide or a legal professional to decide whether there is a legal basis, or am I wrong there?
Well, in terms of it, he is my chief advisor on clinical issues. So it is natural to seek advice on clinical issues from him, and it was a clinical decision that was made. Stephen, I would very much like to talk to Sarah, to her mother. I'm very struck by they themselves and how they've conducted themselves and how dignified they have been in all of this. And I would like to speak to them personally about these issues as opposed to discussing all of those kind of permutations. I'd prefer to talk about the wider issues and policy issues and so forth, but the personal issues have not been personally.
No, absolutely. And I will pass your invitation to speak to them on to them today. I will be speaking to them today after this programme. So am I right in drawing a conclusion that it was your gut instinct that Sarah should have been able to have an abortion in Northern Ireland? Is that what your gut instinct was?
Well, what my instinct would say is that I'm opposed to abortion and termination of pregnancy per se. Now, if I can provide some clarification about that, I had huge resonance with. I was able to catch up late last night on the TV program. A huge resonance with what Sarah's mother said, in that they were sitting in a clinic, and people were in that clinic, and they were laughing and they were chatting, and they didn't seem to be particularly concerned about what was about to happen, and they were there as a result of one night stands and so forth. And says, "What's my daughter doing here? She doesn't fit in this category." And I think that we have to be very clear that in this particular situation, that others use termination of pregnancy as a contraception. This wasn't what Sarah was about. Sarah really wanted to have this baby. It transpired that this baby could never live. And for some people, they would prefer to go through the process and have the baby being born. But for Sarah, that wasn't an option that she felt she could go through. And I have a lot of respect for that point of view that she's expressing, and respect for her in expressing that point of view.
Does respect translate, Minister, to you being prepared to say this morning that you are minded to support people like Sarah in circumstances identical to Sarah, having or similar to Sarah, being able to have an abortion here in Northern Ireland? Are you minded to say that?
Well, what we have produced is guidelines which seek to clarify the legislation, and the legislation doesn't give an awful lot of room for manoeuvre. And what we would want to do is to look at the draft guidelines, look at the responses that there's been to the draft guidelines, and seek to ensure that clinicians do have a degree of flexibility in responding to these issues. Termination of pregnancy in these circumstances is never a black and white issue. I don't think that there's a 100% right response on any of them, but I do think that we have to be able to give full consideration to the circumstances that prevail. And the circumstances that prevailed in this instance was that the child wouldn't live for any length of time outside of the womb. And that's certainly something that we can take a further look at in the regulations to see if we can provide a degree more flexibility for parents in those circumstances.
So you think the guidelines should be changed to provide more flexibility?
I think that we can look at the guidelines to try to assist clinicians and the parents to make the right decisions for them. And that's a very difficult one for all of us. And that's something that we can look at further.
You said at the beginning of the interview that in circumstances similar to Sarah's, that abortions have happened in the past here in Northern Ireland that you were familiar with. Is that right?
I am aware of a circumstance of actually someone that I know where that happened. And they were basically told that they needed to go through a termination. And one of the questions that I was asking in relation to Sarah's case, if there's a risk of the baby dying in between scans and then there's some decomposition of that baby, what's the potential for there to be septicemia or infection, which would cause real physical harm to the mother and potentially risk or cause a risk to the mother's life? And that's one of the areas that I do want to look at.
You know, the objection to these guidelines, which, Minister, you supported, which your department issued, it's not a surprise to you that there are people saying that there are fundamental problems with them. For example, the Royal College of Midwives earlier this year said the following: the tone and language used throughout the document is intimidatory and threatening, both for women and for healthcare professionals. The document would appear to have been written in such a way as to create uncertainty and fear of possible criminal or legal repercussions among those working in this area, and thereby exert a chilling effect on the provision of abortion services for women in Northern Ireland. So there you had a key body in Northern Ireland, the Royal College of Midwives, pointing the problem out, and nothing was done. And because nothing was done, and because nobody looked at it, Sarah didn't have that choice that you're clearly inferring she should have had today. Was that a mistake?
Well, what I would say on that statement, that statement was made by Brady Hughes of the Royal College of Midwives. I'm not sure.
It was her submission to your guidelines.
That is the college's position, but we'll not get a debate on that.
It was. it was the Royal College's submission because it was on their headed paper. I've seen it.
Well, in terms of the language that is used and the guidelines, these guidelines have been going on for many, many years and have been challenged, I believe, twice in court when previous guidelines have been produced and have been overturned in court twice. So what we're looking to do in Northern Ireland, we're caught betwixt two very hardened positions here and unfortunately Sarah and people like her are caught in the middle of it. We have people who believe that abortion is wrong in all circumstances. We have people who want to open the doors for abortion in any circumstance. Now, what we want to do is to ensure that we look at this in a very fair way, in a very rational way, in a very reasonable way. And in terms of producing the guidelines reflect what the law is as it exists in Northern Ireland. The legalistic language in it is obviously language that is produced by lawyers, not by me, and I have to take that advice on it. Clinical language is language that is produced by people from the medical side, and we have managed to get an agreement on putting out those draft guidelines.
Sorry, can I just clarify that for my understanding? Sorry, because I do want to understand this. So did the Attorney General write up these guidelines, or was it the Chief Medical Officer?
There was a team writing up these guidelines. I took advice off the Departmental Solicitor's Office, and they provide the department with that legal
advice. So the Attorney General had no input into these guidelines whatsoever?
The Attorney General has a role as advising the executive and advising ministers.
Did he have any input into how these guidelines were written up?
So, on all of this, the ASO and the Attorney General will work together on these issues.
Yeah, but the reason I'm pushing you on this, Edwin, there's a reason. So let me just be open about the reason. When you have both members of the community who are being threatened with life imprisonment, the possibility of life imprisonment, and then you have medical staff who are being told that there is a grey area in the law, which may result indeed in them ending up in jail if they even promote abortion outside of Northern Ireland. Did the Attorney General write any of this?
My advice comes from the departmental, on this issue, comes from the departmental solicitor's office. You would need to speak to the departmental solicitor's office about what contact they had with the Attorney General.
And can I move on to this point? Because look, obviously Sarah has had a massive impact. Whether you agree with her or disagree with her, she's had a massive impact. And this is a situation, to be fair to you, no matter what side of the fence you're on, are politicians listening? Yes. Are you engaging? Yes. And, you know, for as many times as this programme has said, you know, where are the politicians? Why are they not engaging? You are. So I'm sure there'll be many people that will admire you for engaging in this subject, whatever side of the fence they are on. But can I also move on to a different category of people who are absolutely caught up in this story the more I have looked at it and spent time on this? And that is the dedicated staff and medical professionals who, you will agree with me, Minister, work tirelessly in Northern Ireland within the NHS. Now, another part of these guidelines doesn't just talk about the individual who is seeking the abortion. It is about the obstetricians and the midwives and anybody that is a member of the NHS that might be caring for that lady. And indeed, maybe some of the relatives, by the way, of these individuals who are seeking an abortion. And let me just read again this other guideline. The question of whether it would be lawful in Northern Ireland to advocate or promote to a pregnant woman in Northern Ireland the termination of her pregnancy outside Northern Ireland has never been considered by the courts. This is a grey area in which, pending clarification by the courts, the lawfulness of such conduct would have to be regarded as uncertain. And that's a guideline. And what I'm suggesting to you, Minister, is that's scaring doctors. And it's scaring midwives. They might actually end up in jail for trying to care for someone. Do we need clarification around that grey area?
Well, you'd only get clarification if you actually had a court case, and I think that's what the guidelines are. We're saying that it is very legal language.
Well, precisely. So how does an ordinary doctor interpret that?
Well, when they hadn't guidance, they interpreted as they would, and that was up to people themselves to make their own decision.
Does it not add to a chill factor?
I have been forced through court cases that have previously been taken to produce guidelines. And when we were put in a position of producing guidelines, then, you know, whenever these issues come up, what can the doctors can advise, for example? And the legal language would indicate that there is no history here.
So people are
doing that at risk. That's legal language.
Okay,
and that's for the lawyers to produce.
But you say that. And can I tell you what was in my mind when I read this? I covered, and many journalists covered it across the water and indeed here, but I was on Five Live last year when the whole issue of assisted suicide was being discussed nationally. And it was one of national debate about whether a member, and it's a completely different subject than abortion, by the way. You'll see the point I'm making in a moment or two. So in terms of assisted suicide, there were people asking questions in terms of, look, if as a family member you helped to bring someone to dignitas, would that be seen as a criminal offence? Because people weren't sure how to interpret the law. And what happened was the director of the CPS, the director of the Crown Prosecution Service, issued guidance, issued clarification so that the public could be clear, and said it is in the public interest for us to make it clear when we would more than likely prosecute and when we would more than likely not prosecute. Now, why couldn't something similar be done here in Northern Ireland? Why couldn't the director of the Public Prosecution Service here in Northern Ireland provide clarity around this with the aid of the Attorney General? Why are we just leaving doctors and nurses and relatives vulnerable in grey areas? Is that not fair comment from me?
That request can be made. I don't know whether that can go from being a grey area to a black and white area.
But they issued guidance across the water. Well, would you undertake to do this? Would you ask the director of the PPS to provide guidance? We will ask if he's minded to do so. Will you?
Oh, I can ask the departmental solicitor's office to consult with who they believe to be the appropriate person, whether it's the Attorney General, the Director of Public Prosecutions, to discuss that matter.
And will you do that?
I can, yes, and I'm very happy to do it. That is not an issue. The guidelines are guidelines, and the law is the law, and I think that we need to ensure that this is dealt with through justice, under the criminal law, and that we provide guidance to give as much clarity as possible. And, you know, you're indicating that this is a grey area. Is there the potential to provide more clarity? I don't know, but it's certainly something that we can look at.
Finally, what do you say to Sarah this morning? I'll tell you what, just before you answer that, when I met her, and I cannot support Sarah because it's inappropriate for me to do so. I've got to remain impartial. What I can do is support her having a voice and having a platform, and I can also support those people who are pro-life having a platform. What do you say to Sarah this morning? Because before she did this story, she said to me, it is too late for me, it is too late for my family, but I want to try to help other people after me. What do you say, dear Minister?
Well, the first thing I say to Sarah is that I sympathise totally with her. Firstly, in the loss of her baby, and that was something that she was looking forward to, something that would be really, really precious to her. The birth of a baby into a family is always something that is just such an exciting thing and such a good thing for families. And she can only be heartbroken and disappointed at the loss that she currently feels. In terms of how we look at other cases, I want to discuss with Sarah and with her mother her case. I want to look at how the application of that is taking place. Obviously, Sarah is currently in a grieving process, and we need to take that into consideration in our conversations with her. But in looking at all of this, what we want is to get fair and equitable and reasonable solutions to all of these issues. It is done in a hugely difficult circumstances in Northern Ireland, where we have some people who to jump on this very sensitive story, to have abortion on demand, and we have others who are you know, being very forceful about having absolutely no change. I would want to make it absolutely clear to Sarah that what happened to her as she left the clinic was completely and totally wrong. Shouldn't have happened. No one should be shouting into anybody's face at what they're doing when they don't understand the circumstances of what people are going through. And I look forward to having the opportunity of discussing these matters fully and properly with Sarah.
Okay.
And with her mother.
Minister, we really appreciate you coming on this morning, and thank you for spending so much time with us today.